The following program is brought to you by its producer and host and does not necessarily reflect the views or ideas of this radio station or any sane person, really. It's Dave's Gone By, hosted by Dave Lefkowitz. Coming right now.
Tropical hot dog night. Like two flamingos in a fruit fight.
There goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of talk radio, music, and comedy brought to you every week on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and live streaming on AM 1240 WGBB.com. It is Thursday night, June 10th, 2004. Our top story, former President Ronald Reagan is still dead. They've checked, they've rolled him over a couple of times, no sign of life at all, not even a post-mortem bowel spasm, he is dead. So, for crying out loud, can we stop the funeral already? I'm sorry, but jeez, he died last weekend. Get him in the ground already before he starts to smell worse than his diaper did when he was alive. People have been waiting on a line for 19 hours just to take a minute to file past his casket, which I'm sure to some people is touching, but to me, it just explains why Disneyland became such a phenomenon. I went to Disneyland once in my life, and I don't see myself going back, because what do you do at Disneyland or Disney World? You wait online for an hour and a half, to go on a two-minute ride that essentially challenges you not to lose your lunch. This, for the average American, is entertainment. This is what they would rather do than read a book, go bowling, go hiking. No, no, let's wait for a really, really long time in the hot sun and then ride in a crowded subway car upside down at 200 miles an hour. I hate to say it, but I think Walt Disney was the first terrorist. And he was the best because not only did he torture massive amounts of people at his theme parks, he trumped Nazi Germany because he made the whole procedure voluntary and popular. That was his genius. And he made people pay big money, too. What is it, like $50, $60 for an e-ticket? That was Hitler's mistake. He should have charged $45 to get into Auschwitz. Every Jew in the world would be like, oh, we have to go. We can't do the crematoria and the firing squad on the same trip, but at least the kids will have a choice. No, but ridiculous as that sounds, how different is that from what Disney does? And by extension, this endless pre-election folderol for a president who basically has been brain dead for 10 years. Or 20. No, no, I come not to bury Reagan. Although, someone ought to, eventually. I don't remember presidential funerals lasting this long. Granted, it's been a long time. I think the last one was Nixon. But I seem to recall, they die. And it's the top news story that night, and there are all these mini-documentaries and Meet the Press remembrances. And then 2 days later, they preempt everything. There's a solemn processional. The public gets to watch from semi-afar. And that's it. Boom. It's over. Not this elongated orgy of quasi-military empty patriotism. Now, I mean, everybody loves a parade. And it's cool if people want to pay their respects, but hey, Tony Randall died a few weeks ago. Think of all the people he gave real pleasure, real joy to, and jobs through his theater company, and happy memories from The Odd Couple. He had a funeral, celebrities came, and under the sod he went. I can't imagine what would have happened had Joseph Lieberman been the Democratic nominee and he'd won the presidency. Then some lunatic assassinates him, because, let's face it, he would be number one on the hit parade of every Muslim extremist in the world. And Jewish law says you have to bury him within a day of his death. Couldn't even be an autopsy, although they would probably break that rule if it weren't from natural causes. But Lieberman couldn't hang around moldering for a week while every yokel from Muncie took a van up to D.C. to walk around this pine box. And the Reagan thing bothers me, not because I hated him. I thought for 4 out of 8 years he was a really good president. And I'll talk more about that later. But And it's the media saturation, the expansion of time to fill time slots. And I know I'm only feeding into that by talking about it on this show, but I'm only responding to the excessive nature of this public grief. It's not like the Kennedy assassination. There's no shock here. Reagan dropping dead at age 93 is about as surprising as Ellen DeGeneres breaking into a dance after her monologue. And Ronnie is not going to jump back up or fall out of the casket, even if a terrorist shows up and tries to shoot him. Well, I mean, the damage would be irrelevant. There's no need for America to stay glued to the tube for updates and a sense of what's going on and what the hell happens next. There's nothing to see, just a box with a flag on it. And you know the American government doesn't think that's important, because they got angry when a photographer tried to take pictures of a lot of boxes with American flags on them coming back from Iraq. But I felt sorry for Nancy Reagan. Yes, you heard me right. I actually felt sorry for Nancy Reagan. And you know why? Because I watched her when her husband's casket was first brought to Santa Monica, and they had the first ceremonies. I put on the TV in the morning, like 7 o'clock California time. I was up early. Then I went out for a swim, took a shower, had some breakfast, put on the TV 4 hours later, and she was still standing there. This poor woman, old woman, had to stand there and be dignified and diplomatic and solemn in front of thousands of people with television watching her every move for hours. And now, you know, this was 5 days ago, and the funeral is still going on. Again, Jewish people would be halfway through Shiva. Irish folks would be putting away their whiskey already. But she has got to be stateswoman of the world, day after day after day, for the benefit of, what, CNN? Fox? The strength of a Republican Party heading for a convention soon? Now that may sound cynical, but how odd is it that they designated tomorrow as a national day of mourning for a man half the country feels left much to be desired, and yet, in all this time, nobody's made a Memorial Day of September 11th. No government leader said, hey, Lower New York was destroyed that morning, and might actually mean something to people. Well, maybe not to our Texas president, because 9/11 was all about New York, which, with this administration, means it's about as important as Groundhog Day. But as far as Reagan goes, one assumes that Nancy and Ron Jr. and Patty Davis had reconciled themselves to Daddy's demise roughly around the time Ron Bo dragged his ass to Bitburg. Nancy had to be thinking, okay, first the mind, then the body, maybe he's got 5 more years. Let's see, do I still have Jerry Ford's phone number? And the most ironic part is that for all the TV coverage, all the preemptions, all the specials, someone pointed out to me that, okay, Ronald Reagan died on Saturday, June 5th. He died in the morning at his home in Bel Air. And the media knew about it. There were screen crawls telling that it had happened. And yet, somehow, that didn't affect the running or broadcasting of the Belmont Stakes. Smarty Jones pooping out in the final turn was somehow more important than Reagan crapping out for good. Which is fine. That is a choice. That's what makes horse racing. But don't turn around and then make like Reagan's death is the most important media event since 9/11 when it wasn't when it first happened. It's a spectacle. It makes for good visuals. And this being radio, maybe I'm a little jealous. I mean, how many living actors wouldn't kill for the FaceTime Reagan's getting for free? And he doesn't even have to have a face. Come to think of it, he doesn't even have to be there at all. I'll bet the FBI snuck his body in the ground a week ago for safety, and everybody's filing around the casket with a sack of flour in it. And I realize, I opened the show with an old joke that Saturday Night Live used to do about Generalissimo Francisco Franco, you know, being still dead. And I'm sorry about the plagiaristic impulse. I'm a little rusty, a little off my game, because I've been gone for a week. The show you heard last week with One Last November was pre-recorded, but I'm back today. Lots to tell you about, and I will go further into the whole Reagan thing, as well as tell you about my trip to San Francisco, where, if I didn't leave my whole heart, I certainly left an aorta or two. Also, a News Gone By segment, which we do almost every week. That's where we look at events in the world around us that make no sense, and then try to make them into nonsense. And finally, if there's time, a tribute to another person who died this week, someone who's not going to get wall-to-wall TV coverage on 50 networks, Robert Quine, rock guitarist for the Voidoids, Lou Reed, Matthew Sweet. He took the stupid way out, the chemically assisted ticket to the Boneyard, but he made his own small contribution to popular music, and we'll hear how late in the show. If you are confused, if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you don't know who I am, don't panic. It's simple. I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, and humorist. And this is my show, Dave's Gone By, a blend of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music that has been airing weekly, well, strongly and weekly, since October 2002. This is our 80th episode, and I'm going to keep on doing them until I get it right. I have another 50 minutes in this one, so please stay with me. And just a reminder, in case you haven't already surmised it for yourself, that unlike the Reagan miniseries, this program may have some content not suitable for, well, I guess that's for you to decide. We like to say that Dave's Gone By is rated DGB-13, kind of like PG-13, without the nudity or four-letter words, but a bit more than PG in thought and intent. In other words, if you think your child shouldn't be listening, you probably should, but it's your call to make. And if you want to hear the News Gone By, the Reagan stuff, the Frisco Frolics, and Robert Quine, all you gotta do is stay tuned from now till 8 o'clock as we explore Bay Areas on Dave's Gone By right after this. What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Is it good? Can you bring the kids? Performing Arts Insider is the theater guide. Call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Hey, Dave's Gone By listeners. If you like hearing me, you'll love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of pure Dave, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit my website. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Thursday, June 10th. And as I said in the opening, I do want to talk a little bit more about old Ronnie, Ronald Reagan, and the mixed feelings that I have about his presidency. You know, I hung the whole last week with a bunch of very liberal and left-thinking people. Not all of them, but I was with theater critics on a trip in San Francisco. So I may have gotten a very different version of feelings for Reagan than you might find across the rest of certainly middle America, but much of America as well. And I maybe swung a little conservatively to the right of the folks I was with, who all saw him as like this beginning of an evil chapter in American public history, where only a certain minority of people are being helped and served and getting their, not only their money's worth in taxes, but their life's worth of being a person born into this country. I see Reagan in a couple of different ways. First of all, I mean, I was old enough to remember the Carter years and how when Carter first came in, everybody thought he would be pretty cool because he was folksy and very smart and seemed to be very humanistic. It's interesting that the thing that becomes his most prized legacy was putting Sadat and Begin together and doing that in the Middle East, and yet it meant so little in the scheme of things of life in America, because everything else Carter did kind of went wrong when it came to the hostages and inflation and crime and everything. New York and the rest of the country just seemed on a real downswing. Everybody remembers Carter's stupid speech about how people, if they felt better about America and about themselves, if they got over their own crisis of confidence, America would be in better shape. And even though he had some rightness to that, it was more a crisis of confidence in him than in ourselves. And Reagan, he glommed right onto that. And when he came along with, it's morning in America, and we're not going to tolerate what's happening in Iran, and we're going to put things all together and get this person out of office who seems like a nice guy but just doesn't know what he's doing running a country. Well, it seemed right. And although, yes, he may have traded arms for hostages, they were let go on the day Reagan came in. It was a sickening little deal, but what did Carter do? He crashed a couple of helicopters in the desert, and there was no other way of getting those poor hostages out for more than a year. So for once, America felt strong again, and we had a very good economy for a long time. That 1980s boom, okay, in later years, then we say we paid for it with the deficit. And as I said, I was pro-Reagan, and I think I even voted for him for the second term over Mondale. I don't recall, but those first 4 years, definitely, you know, his resume was looking good, and then things started to really fall down. I mean, Bonzo Goes to Bitburg was the name of a punk song at the time. What was in his head when he went to lay a wreath at the tomb of dead German soldiers of World War II? I mean, of all places to go, of all things to do, not just for, obviously, the sake of Jews, of which I am one, but for anybody who had parents or relatives or ancestors who fought in World War II. And then there's other things where I go both ways on, like Nancy Reagan's Just Say No. You know, the classic idea that you can stop kids from trying drugs the first time. Maybe you can. But anybody else who's already tried it and is now stuck, well, too bad for them. They made a mistake and they're stuck, and who cares about them? Put them in jail. It's kind of been the Republican policy on everything from drugs to abortion to homelessness to AIDS, which brings us to the AIDS crisis, which truly exploded during the Reagan years. AIDS came on the map in 1982. Ronald Reagan finally mentioned it in a speech in 1986, and he said, well, we have to do a big study on this. And then he finally did and started putting a little bit of money in it 5 years too late. And let's remember, this was the time of the so-called moral majority and Ronald Reagan slashing social programs to play to his conservative base. So his slowness to act absolutely cost more lives than 9/11 ever did. Now, you know, again, he did lots of spending and it picked up the economy like mad. But he also led to a huge deficit, which was supposedly going to be the Democrats failing. So, you know, you've got the government still spending it faster than it came in. And between Ronald Reagan, the two Bushes, and Clinton, the only one who balanced the budget was, well, you can probably guess, the maligned Bill Clinton. And, okay, we can also talk just for a moment about the Cold War and the famous Wait Again bombing in 5 minutes, et cetera, and so forth. And, you know, remember that when Reagan came into office, people still feared Russia. We still have memories of the 1950s and the Cuban Missile Crisis and the shoe pounding and Russia's going into Afghanistan still, when they still felt like a superpower. And Ronald Reagan said, oh no, we're going to break you. And he helped do it. It was not he himself. And pretty much history now says that if he hadn't done it, it would have happened on its own maybe a little while later. But, you know, the more sneaky thing is that Russia apparently wasn't in any kind of superpower shape for a long time, and our government kept that from us so that we would still have the fear and pour all this money and energy into the military and into a strong, you know, federal government to protect us. Other things in the Reagan years, well, poverty, homelessness, but those are always going to be there. He tried to appear compassionate to all people, but he really only cared about a specific chunk of white, middle American, Christian family values people. So his legacy really does continue to this day in that vein, because look at who's in power now and whom his policies are for. And, you know, there's going to come a point a few years from now when there will be a Republican president and the only people his policies will serve are 16 billionaire Jesus freaks. And their companies will own 80% of the world's wealth and they'll control 90% of the world's newspapers, TV stations, and internet portals, and all pray to St. Reagan because, you know, they'll have beatified him by then. And why not? He did have that incredible endless optimism that was so appealing. And what could be wrong with that, right? Well, back after this. Print it, copy it, send it as a gift. All that and more at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Full-service printer, family-owned and operated since 1975. Photocopying, printing, invitations, and great gifts. Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Call 516-569-5577, 569-5577, or on the web at hewlett.minutemanpress.com. Mention Dave's Gone By and get a special price. By now, I hope you've all had a chance to try the Tandoor Grill Indian Restaurant in Rockville Center and its delicious appetizers and main courses of lamb, chicken, and fish. Now it's time to bring 300 of your friends, because downstairs they've opened the Bollywood Lounge, perfect for catering and parties. The Tandoor Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center, 516-766-4440. See the Indialicious menu at TandoorGrill.com. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and the News Gone By for this Thursday, June 10th, 2004. Time for just a couple of stories this week from a Frisky Frisco perspective. In world news, how can you tell the difference between a rotting fruit and a rotting vegetable? The answer? A rotting fruit doesn't get a national day of mourning. No, but seriously, obviously the big news this week, the death of Ronald Reagan. He has, of course, been lying in state for almost a week now, as opposed to George Bush, who's been lying to the state for almost 3 years. People still debate whether Reagan had Alzheimer's during his second term, or if he simply got older, slower, and dumber, but credit where credit is due. His policies did help bankrupt the Soviet Union and cause the fall of communism at least, 6 months before it would have collapsed on its own. And he did pave the way for having an actor become governor of California. And he does leave a legacy besides the shape of the Republican Party. Let's not forget the Reagan Library, where they first shipped his body last week. It's a beautiful building, and, at some point, if someone could just return the book, it would really be great. In science news, a study by world conservationist groups shows that chimpanzees may become extinct within 50 years. Deforestation and disease are making the end of chimps a real possibility, and a definite if the Bush family stops reproducing. In news of the oops, a 34-year-old construction worker from Poland is clinging to life after an accident on the Upper West Side last week. Bricklayer Slavomir Dietrich was working on a facade when he became distracted by a light fixture installed in the area. Apparently, a tenant put up a makeshift lamp because he worried the place was too dark. Well, the bricklayer decided to climb up a metal fence and dismantle the fixture, which, by the way, was soaking wet after days and days of rain. Are you way ahead of me on this? Yes, Slavomir Dietrich was jolted with 30 amperes of electricity. As the owner of the construction firm later put it, quote, "He basically grounded himself out," unquote. The worst part is, as the electricity coursed through his body, Dietrich was still stuck to the metal. It took a co-worker whacking him with a rubber garbage can to knock the poor guy off the pole. The poor pole off the pole, actually. Dietrich was rushed to Roosevelt Hospital in critical condition. He has been responsive. In fact, when his wife came to visit, his face lit up. Unfortunately, so did his legs, his ass, and his balls. In celebrity news, Energizer Batteries has hired New Wave diva Pat Benatar as its new spokesperson. The surprise is that the 51-year-old singer will be helping to sell mini batteries for hearing aids. Putting aside the irony of a loud rock musician being asked to sell something she helped make necessary, Energizer feels that Benatar will tap into a huge market of aging boomers. They have a stigma about hearing devices that they don't apparently have for eyeglasses or high-fiber cereal. Benatar herself doesn't need a hearing aid, but in the ad, she acknowledges that, quote, all those years of rockin' are beginning to take their toll, unquote. Unfortunately, they didn't use my suggestion. I think she should open the commercial singing her big song, Hit Me With Your Best Butt. Speaking of celebrities, there's no end to the strangeness of items people will try to auction off on eBay. The latest, a cough drop, half-sucked by California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. The original listing for the item read, quote, own a piece of DNA from the man himself, unquote. Apparently, Schwarzenegger was at a public event, ditched the lozenge in a trash can, and the enterprising vendor snuck over and rescued it. eBay officials took down the listing shortly after it went up, arguing that selling a used food fell into the prohibitive category of body parts. However, they did say that if the item were reclassified as merely a collectible, it could go back up. They also said that the item lost most of its value because it had been sucked on, which is, coincidentally, the same argument Hillary Clinton makes about her husband. Also in news of the boudoir, a German couple, married for 8 years, finally resorted to a fertility clinic when they couldn't have a baby. Doctors put them through a series of tests, the results showing that both were perfectly normal, fertile, and should have no trouble whatsoever conceiving. Finally, at one point, a researcher asked them how often they had sex. The couple looked at him blankly, and he realized that not only had they never indulged in sexual intercourse, they didn't even know what it was. I'm not joking here. A clinic spokesperson told the press, quote, we're not talking about retarded people here. What a bit. No, we're not talking retarded people, just a couple who were brought up in a religious environment, surprise, surprise, and they were simply unaware, after 8 years of marriage, of the physical requirements necessary to procreate, unquote. The couple are now taking sex therapy lessons, and the clinic has begun a study to see if other heterosexual adults are completely ignorant of their own sexuality. Already signed up for seminars are David Guest, Clay Aiken, and Kevin Spacey. In media news, a poll of British TV viewers shows that their favorite all-time television catchphrase is, don't! That's right, Homer Simpson's exclamation of surprise and dismay. It was the only catchphrase from an American program on their top 10 list. Number 2 was, don't panic, from the 1970s hit Dad's Army. And just missing the list at number 11 was Tony Blair saying, if George Bush says there are weapons of mass destruction, who am I to disagree? A lot of celebrities and VIPs in the news this week, all of whom I'm sure would be welcome at Southampton Hospital. That's where physicians are giving a trial run to a new policy allowing VIP treatment, literally. This summer, the chiefs there will inaugurate something called Southampton Plus, which gives locals and rich summer visitors, quote, VIP services, unquote. Those include priority access to round-the-clock medical care, same-day appointments and house calls, plus emergency room pre-registration to save all that paperwork. The cost is $6,000 per household for the summer, and how nice. That includes, quote, guests and hired help. Not surprisingly, the hospital sees this idea as a way to make much-needed extra money off people who can afford it. Meanwhile, many doctors and townspeople view it as elitist, even unethical, with the rich getting preferential treatment over the poor and middle class. Now, granted, since basic healthcare benefits now cost $300 to $400 per month per person, the idea of people with money getting better doctoring than people without isn't exactly new. And Southampton does promise that the actual care and medical evaluations will be the same for everyone, no matter how much they pay. Still, Southampton Plus does guarantee VIPs a private room, and residents of Montauk, East Hampton, and Amagansett can even register for Double Plus. It has all the advantages of regular Plus And you can have 24-hour surveillance by Alec Baldwin, as well as a guarantee that if you ever need an ambulance, Billy Joel will not be on the road at that time. And that's the news gone by for June 10th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and half-eaten cough drops to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also email me, davesgoneby@aol.com. Your comments, your suggestions, your compliments, they keep me going and spur me on for better and worse. So take a moment and tap out a note, a quick email, just to say hi. Tell me you're listening. Tell me what caught your ear. I might read your letter on the air, name withheld upon request. So send me cards, letters, boxes, and baggies, but please, no Energizer batteries, unless you want me to join AA. Back after this. Hi, folks. Dave Lefkowitz here from Dave's Gone By, and I want to tell you about a product, event, or service. I'm going to talk about it for half a minute or a minute. I'm going to make it really interesting, and all my listeners are going to go, hey, maybe I'll try this product, event, or service. It's called advertising or sponsorship, and it's easy, cost-effective, and just plain effective. To get your person, place, or thing, well, not thing, promoted on Dave's Gone By and reach listeners all over Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, and the tri-state area, just give us a call at 516-295-1511 or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and see sponsorship opportunities, ad rates, and more. Again, the number, 516-295-1511. Insert your product, event, or service here.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care. My love waits there in San Francisco. Above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco. Your golden sun will shine for me.
Tony Bennett, shining on I Left My Heart in San Francisco, and, well, I sort of kind of did there. It was a wonderful trip. That's where I was for most of last week. As I said before, the show you heard the previous week with the band One Last November had been pre-recorded the week before, kind of one of these tricks we do in radio, so I could go away and not have to put on a repeat and just spend my 7 or 8 days by the Frisco Bay and not have to worry about the show. But now that I'm back, all I want to do is talk about how cool San Francisco was. Let me first explain the circumstances of the trip. I belong to the American Theater Critics Association. I've been a theater critic for about, oh gosh, maybe 15 years now, and have belonged to an organization of critics from around the country. We get together, we share ideas, we basically bitch about theater and talk about shows we liked and argue, and it's a lot of fun. And every year we go to a different city in the country and see the theater there and eat ourselves sick at the restaurants there. And if you've ever been to San Fran, you know that's a great place to go eating and gorging, which we all did and had a terrific time at. But also we saw theater. So I think, first of all, it's incumbent on me to tell you what we all saw when we were out in the city by the bay. First night that we were there, the American Conservatory Theater was doing The Mother, or A Mother, excuse me, which was an adaptation of a Russian play by Constance Congdon. I've got to slow my mouth down a little. I'm still on San Francisco brain time, but my mouth is back on New York City mouth time. So I've got to jumble them back together and find a good running speed. Anyway, Constance Congdon adapted this play, which is this really dark, satirical look at an ugly, ugly family and what they do basically for inheritance money. And I thought the play was really smart and sharp and possibly brilliant, but it was not, unfortunately, a good production. Olympia Dukakis was starring. You'll remember her from, Moonstruck movie. And as she does a lot of the time, she was appearing with her real-life husband, Louis Zorich. And unfortunately, they were also among the weakest things in the play because, A, they didn't quite rehearse enough, so you could see her occasionally, not so much bungling a line, but searching for it. You know, she knew the line was coming, and she didn't have it quite down pat. So she just grabbed it at the same time, bumbling it a little, but that's not what you expect from, quote-unquote, a great actress headlining a major play at a major regional theater. And even so, aside from her, what should have been a really raucous and dark and nasty little comedy, like a Russian version of Joe Orton, it wasn't funny enough. It wasn't really funny at all, and the acting styles were kind of all over the place, and there was really dumb music thrown in every now and then for I have no idea what reason. So a big disappointment there, unfortunately. I did not see Masterclass, which some of my fellow critics went to see with Rita Moreno. Report on that is she was darn good. I can't imagine her being better than Zoe Caldwell, whom I saw in New York in that Terrence McNally play. We all saw a show called Drifting Elegant by a guy named Stephen Belber. If that name rings a bell, it's because he recently had the Broadway show Match. That was the one with Frank Langella as the gay guy who may or may not be the father of this angry police officer, which was watchable if really far-fetched. And he also wrote Tape, which was even made into a movie, a small movie with like Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, about these two old high school buddies who get together years later with a woman that one of them may or may not have raped. Anyway, this Drifting Elegant was in some ways Belber's best work. It was a more together piece and very textured and considered about its characters and about a marriage that was in some level of crisis. The only problem was I didn't really like the main character very much. Well, not supposed to, but he's kind of, I don't even know how to describe him. It's not that he's a nerd. He's a sarcastic, wisecracking, well, like me, only not so lovable. but also, he talks a lot, but really does nothing and not sure what his convictions are, and he whines a lot. And we get sick of him a lot before his wife does. And then you've got this secondary plot where this person that he's interviewing, who may or may not have, there's always a may or may not have in a Stephen Belber play. He may or may not have raped this woman that the lead character had an affair with, and yet he goes to interview this guy and even lets him stay up at his home for a day or two, which causes all sorts of havoc. Well written, but a little bit overwritten, and there's not enough plot. So maybe if he develops it more, it'll go further. But even so, it's an encouraging play to see from this playwright. And the other thing that we all saw was a wild piece called Beach Blanket Babylon that is just celebrating either its 30th or 35th. I think it's the 30th anniversary. It's a San Francisco institution. It's sort of like the New York Experience used to be in New York, or, oh gosh, Forbidden Broadway or something like that. It's just 90 minutes, or should be 90 minutes, it's actually about 2 hours, of incredibly crazy and goofy costumes. I mean, huge, giant hats and funny, nutty costumes making fun of world-famous celebrities and little bits of songs. And the only thing wrong with it, and unfortunately it's the most thing wrong with it, is that they really didn't do very many parody songs. All they do is they have somebody come out in a pretty funny, goofy costume and sing the first verse of a famous song pretty straight, or sometimes they sing the whole song through, and it wasn't really all that funny. The cast is extremely talented, and every once in a while they would really score, like there'd be a very quick blackout of one line, and boom, it would go away, and it'd be funny, and you'd laugh, but then you wait 10 minutes for the next laugh, and it's just all going by in a whirl of sound and color, and very loud. And I think the funniest part was that one of our critics, who apparently is deaf in his left ear, or if he wasn't then, he is now. It's not that the show was mic'd so loud, but the way it's arranged, it's a big old cabaret setting with tables and chairs and everything. And if you're really unlucky, you're over on the side where the band is. And there's just this little thin half a wall, and the people closest to the band are right next to the drum, which, you know, bashes the cymbals now and again and hits the drum pretty hard. And, you know, we, who are a few feet away, are already cringing and holding our fingers in our ears. Meanwhile, this poor critic, and I won't mention his name, he's just sitting there, you know, deaf in his ear, like, you know, they're whacking this drum by his head, and he's not moving. So all credit to him. That's all I can say. Anyway, I spent so much time on the theater, I want to tell more about the San Francisco trip than that, including that we went to the Museum of Modern Art, and a couple of things that they're doing there. In case anybody's going out to San Fran, they have a really good exhibit on pop art, you know, the whole Andy Warhol thing. And one of the things I didn't even realize about Warhol that makes you appreciate him a little more is, like, when he does the Brillo soap boxes and stuff. He didn't just put a Brillo soap box in a room and shine a light on it and call it art, which would be one level of pop art. He constructed out of, like, heavy wood a real box and then painted it to look like a light cardboard soap box, which adds, I guess it adds complexity, but it makes it a little more interesting anyway. And the other interesting exhibit there at this SF MoMA was something called The Valley, a series of photographs by Larry Sultan. And what he did was he went to all these houses that people owned in and around L.A., these little very normal middle-class houses. And when people would go away from them or go on vacation, they would be rented to the directors of porn films. And that's what would get shot there. And so he went around with his camera shooting basically the environs, typical normal middle-class room, and yet there you'd see a tube of KY jelly or a naked woman getting her hair done. And it isn't a very sexual exhibit. I mean, there is some sexuality going on. Usually it's to the very side of the frame or not part of the frame's context. It's more about just this weird kind of stuff going on in what should basically be the ultimate normalcy. So that was interesting. We also went, my favorite tour of the trip, and one of my favorite tours ever, was of the Dow House. Now, this was a house constructed by Carlotta Monterey. She was the wife of Eugene O'Neill, and he was already very famous, world famous, in fact, and couldn't go anywhere without being recognized. So she constructed him a home all the way up in the San Ramon Valley Hills so that he could get away and just write and also, you know, get off the sauce. So in 1937, that's what they did. And she built the house to her specifications in a very Dao Zen-y kind of Chinese way. And you know, the look of it, the architecture, and I'm not big on architecture, but it is interesting the way she painted things. Dark blue ceilings, brown, you know, tile floors, very white walls, kind of heaven and earth dichotomy going on there, with huge windows, the irony there being that she had the greatest views in certain rooms, and yet because she had cataracts, she had to actually had to hang black screens in front of half of those windows, or else the glare would just get to her and she couldn't function. So that's kind of sad. But he did, in the 6 years that Eugene O'Neill lived in the Dow House, he didn't touch a drop, which is pretty amazing. And he also wrote Long Day's Journey Into Night, and I think Wilderness and A Moon for the Misbegotten. So, yeah, Karl Lagerfeld did him a great service by bringing him there. Unfortunately, as you find out during the tour, it was an absolutely fascinating and wonderful tour guide we had. And she brought us finally into his study, where we heard his voice reading a passage from Long Day's Journey. And we found out that his shakes and what was semi-misdiagnosed as Parkinson's, but was a similar neurological ailment that was not just alcoholism, but exacerbated by the alcoholism, made it impossible for him to function there so isolated. So eventually, when he couldn't write anymore, he ended up hating this house that he loved so much because it became a prison. And the other thing about the house, though, was the really cool thing, is that O'Neill was a dog lover, and he had a Dalmatian that he loved beyond all things. Silverdean Emblem was the name. We called it Blemmy for short. And Blemmy had his own, almost his own little room, certainly his own little bed, and he had a Hermes jacket and stuff. They took care of that dog really, really well. If it were run into town, they'd send a servant to go fetch it back. And maybe the most moving thing that O'Neill ever wrote was not Moon for the Misbegotten, was not Long Day's Journey Into Night, but this last will and testament that he wrote for his dog. And it's online in a couple of places. You can go look it up. But it's really so sad. And like every dog owner on the tour, we're just standing there choking back tears while the tour guide was reading parts of it. Anyway, a couple more things about San Fran. You know, the last time I was there, a year ago, I had to say that I was a little disappointed in how much it felt like New York just with hills. You know, smaller but also tougher to get around. I felt differently this time. Now it feels like they've taken the greatness of New York and somehow made it feel like a small town. And it's sort of all the difference in the world. And maybe you can hear it in my voice. Unfortunately, the one thing I wanted was a hotel with a pool. So we were staying at the Hilton. I did a Priceline, all that kind of thing. And finally, I had one morning where I was free, where I could get to take a dip, and I did not realize that the pool was heated beautifully, but it was outdoors. So it was 50-degree weather in San Francisco in the mornings. And there I am. I'm swimming away. I'm going into a hot tub and coming out of it. And 2 days later, I was sick as a dog. And you can still hear the congestion and all that. And did not even ruin the trip somehow. But I don't know what the point of telling you all that is. But if you hear something in my throat, or maybe my brain or my context is a little foggy today, well, just blame it on the fog of Frisco. But I'm back, I'm better, and I'll finish the show right after this. In an ideal world, Dave's Gone By would play 24/7. But I need my beauty sleep. Should you turn WGBB off when I'm not on? No way! Here are three other shows you should listen to. Long Island's Dating, an advice and interview program for singles hosted by Bonnie D. Graham, kicking off the weekend Friday nights at 6. The Mr. Redman Music Show, independent Long Island musicians and bands. Redman plays them first and you get to vote. Saturday nights at 7:30. And Sunday nights, it's Your World with Joe Salzone, politics and current events from a conservative but open-minded perspective. Sunday nights at 7. So you see, if it can't be all Dave all the time, it can still be radio worth listening to. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6, Mr. Redman, Saturdays, 7:30 to 9, and of course, Joe Salzone, Sunday nights at 7. And during the week, all sorts of Chinese people.
Gone so old in the night sun, I I climb to the window and down to the street. I'm shining like a new diamond. Down, down trends of food for all those Brooklyn girls that try so hard to break out of the little worlds. Girl, you wave your hand and it's got a lot of clothes. Damn, nothing that will ever capture your heart as it's thorns without the rose. Be careful of burning the dark. If I was the one you chose to be, your only one, hold it. Can't you hear me now? Can't you hear me now? Glad to see you tonight. Roll it down to the train. Very nice. It's just the same. You leave me lonely now. I know you. I know your stairs and your doorway. I walk down your street and past your feet. I stand by the light of the doorway to watch a massive fall. Oh baby, they all have heart attacks. They stay at the carnival, but they'll never win you back. I'll see you tonight.
Bell, 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 bell. Yeah, that's the sound of Robert Quine's guitar on the Tom Waits album Rain Dogs, and his, well, a hit for Tom Waits was Downtown Train. And Robert Quine took his last hit Saturday, June 5th, 2004. Age 61, died of a heroin overdose. Apparently he was despondent over the recent death of his wife, which, okay, it's sad, but I'm still... no excuse for a musician of this day and age dying of a drug overdose. And I can't say I'm a big guitar hero kind of a guy, so I don't follow guitarists the way I do singer-songwriters and stuff like that. But he did contribute some nice music additions, some noodling, that's the wrong word for it, filigree is a better word, to some artists that I do like and do listen to a lot, everyone from Tom Waits and his work on the Rain Dogs album, Marianne Faithfull's Strange Weather, and the Lloyd Cole album, very underrated album called Love Story. And you'll hear that wail, wail of Quine's guitar. But I think he's best known for the work he did, well, punk-wise with Richard Hell and the Voidoids, but later on with Lou Reed on two of his albums, Legendary Hearts and The Blue Mask. And Reed came out in a very typical way when asked to give kind of an elegy for Quine. He, of course, makes himself sound so smart while paying tribute to someone else, typical Lou. But here's what he said. Robert Quine was a magnificent guitar player, an original and innovative tyro of the vintage beast. Thanks, Lou. He was an extraordinary mixture of taste, intelligence, and rock and roll abilities combined with major technique and a scholar's memory for every decent guitar lick ever played under the musical sun. He made tapes for me, for which I'm eternally grateful. Quine was smarter than a lot of the long players. I'm paraphrasing here to save a little time, but the proof is in Quine's recordings, some of which, happily, are mine, says Lou Reed, and if you can find more interesting sounds and musical clusters than Quine on Waves of Fear from the 1982 Lou Reed album The Blue Mask, well, says Reed, it's probably something else by Robert Quine. So we're going to hear Waves of Fear to end the program, but before that, want to take care of a little final business here. Got an email this week from Soda. You remember him from last week of One Last November. He says, howdy. He tuned into the show, and so did a bunch of his friends, and he says, it was so great. Thank you, Soda. I also got the CD in the mail. I sent him a CD copy of the program. And by the way, if you want one of your own of last week's or this week's or any episode of Dave's Gone By, the cost is only $14, and the details are on my website, davesgoneby.com. Anyway, Soda says, it was a pleasure doing the show with you. You are great on the radio, and hearing the show with us on it, it was so cool. I hope you are doing well, and that we'll cross paths again sometime soon. Again, thank you. You rock. Peace. Soda. I think I just wanted to read that because somebody actually said to me once in my life, you rock. Never happened before, will never happen again, but thank you for that. And speaking of rock, special thanks to my rock, my wife, Joyce, who helped make San Francisco such a fun and happy trip. Thanks also to the American Theater Critics Association for being such a great group year after year, city after city. And thank you to some of the usual suspects at this radio station. Bonnie D. Graham, host of Long Island's Dating, all about the single scene Friday nights at 6. Mr. Redman, tracking those independent bands and artists and giving them airplay Saturday nights, 7:30 to 9. And after his show, it's the Mikey and Jimmy Show, a comedy team with evening zoo chops, 9 to 10 Saturday nights. Sunday nights, it's my pal Joe Salzone, conservative politics, opinions, and laughter, Sunday nights at 7. He also has a more off-the-cuff late evening version at 10. And muchas gracias to our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, for copying, printing, engraving, binding, egg candling, pulp electing, 516-569-5577. Open Monday through Friday, so tell them Dave's Gone By sent you for a 10% discount. And speaking of 10% discounts, get a yummy one at the Tondora Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center. Pleasant atmosphere, good food, and even a 300-seat Bollywood lounge in the basement. Call 516-766-4440 or see the menu at TondoraGrill.com. Not Tandoori, Tandoor. Leave off the last I for Indialicious. And last thank you for the night, thank you, you, for being my listeners and joining me in the neighborhood. I hope you'll be with me next Thursday, June 17th, 7 p.m., for an entirely different episode of Dave's Gone By. Not even sure what it will be at this point, so you gotta tune in to find out. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Well, we begin bombing in 5 minutes. And gone by.
I've lost control, I'm suffocating without a word. Crazy with sweat, fiddle on my jaw. What's that funny noise? What's that on the floor? Waves of fear, pulsing with death. I curse at my tremors, I jump at my own step. I cringe at my terror, I hate my own smell. I know where I must be in hell. Waves of fear.